Pulling the Sling Tech Show. Pulling the Sling Tech Show.
Hey, welcome to the October 15th, the fourth version of the Linux Link Tech Show.
Woo-hoo.
I'm Dan Washko. I'll be your co-host tonight, and right across from me, so close I could kiss him on the lips, the infamous Mr. Link Fezziman.
Thank you very much. Hi, everybody.
How you doing today, Link?
I'm doing really good. How about yourself, Dan?
I'm doing pretty good myself. That would help if I had a microphone closer, I think. All right. This is our fourth show, Link.
Yeah, four shows. Now, that's an entire month we've been doing this with our whole, three or four users each time. Well, three or four live users each time. I do have a really interesting piece of information before we go a lot further with that, though. I looked today, and we have actually had the archives downloaded 56 times.
Is that...
56 any, times do, for, you have for these four shows.
Any statistics as to which show was downloaded the most?
I could probably go through and look and generate some interesting statistics, but as of right now, last week's show was downloaded 10 times. I think it was 14 times before that, and before that I really couldn't say because I don't remember.
Well, that's pretty cool. So far tonight we have what appears to be... three people on.
Outstanding.
And that would make an extra person listening through Winamp. Well, I wonder who they are. They've been connected for 1 second, according to the log right here. 22 seconds now, if I refresh the screen.
You're fresh.
Yeah. It's been a busy week for both Link and myself. And I know we have some plans to do some follow-ups from last week's show. Particularly with alternatives to wired equivalent privacy or WEP on wireless networks. We're going to pass that off on to next week due to the amount of hassles that we had this week with work and everything. We didn't get a lot of time. Last night was the October meeting of the LVLUG, which Link did not attend. Another failing on his part.
It is.
How dare you?
It is.
We were nice enough to meet at Nazareth again, Software Consulting Services, Richard Cicelli's Newspaper Systems Group. Really nice facility over there. Had a couple of machines that had network connectivity. A nice little meeting table. A handful of people showed up. It was very comfortable. Everybody was happy. Went to about 9 o'clock, which is pretty early.
That's pretty early for a LUG meeting, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Alan had to leave because he has to get up in the morning.
Well,
and I had to leave a little bit earlier because I had to go back to work. So when I was coming home from work last night, Alan was probably getting up to go to work.
Probably. Speaking of Alan, Alan did actually make it to the tech show today. Hey, Alan! Woo!
And cool.
Let me hit him with the sound effect.
Yeah, hit him with the sound effect.
Hopefully we won't crash.
And as an added bonus, I brought in the purple celebrity mic of death, and you can actually hear Alan speak. Alan?
Hello, everyone.
How you doing tonight, Alan?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Is your throat a little better from last week?
Much better. Feel much better than I was last week.
It's kind of funny because you were sick last week, and now Link is sick.
Right.
So I wonder what's really going on behind the scenes of the tech show.
He's been smooching me out by the car. That's what it is.
All right. But it's good to have you here tonight, Alan.
Absolutely.
Link, this past week, I did manage to look into why we were having problems playing sound effects
yes.
through Muse. I had posted to the Dynabolic user group, not user group, mailing list. The response I got back from them was that they weren't, I wasn't sure what library, but they're not using libmad for MP3 equivalency, and they said the future versions of Muse will be using libmad to play MP3 files,
mm-hmm.
and then they recommended using AUG format instead. And I've been
and
a little...
That appears to be working pretty good.
It does. I'm only hesitant to use it. I think we need to be careful, because you notice that when we were playing around beforehand, it dumped out on us. And I think if we're playing MP3s and AUGs pretty close together, I think it has a problem with that.
Ooh.
So I don't have a single MP3 sound effect up there. I'm going to keep our fingers crossed that everything will work out smoothly.
Except for the actual stream, which is an MP3, right?
It's an MP3 format now, yes. I think we'll have to... We definitely got to get together and experiment more with this stuff throughout the week. But I know our schedules have been really, really hectic. Might be a nice project for the lug to do.
Yeah. We can always use projects for the lug to do, as a matter of fact.
Has anybody else joined up on the chat line yet, or is it just...
No, we
your
just
wife
have,
and Alan.
We have myself, you, Alan, and Michelle. And if anybody else out there is listening, and obviously someone else is listening somewhere,
yeah,
please
one other
feel
person.
Free. Yeah, please feel free to join us on IRC. You can point your favorite, and this is for everybody. When you do hear this, when you do hear this broadcast, you can catch us every week at 9 o'clock by pointing your. Hey, Moondog just joined. How you doing, Moondog? Anyway, you can catch us every week at 9 o'clock by pointing your favorite IRC client to the linuxlink.net and just joining channel #TechShow. That's the linuxlink.net, channel #TechShow. And we're always happy to see you on. And, boy, it's nice to have some extra listeners and people who we can talk with during the show.
Maybe with a little bit of luck, we'll have some actual LV Lug members tonight that were at the Lug meeting yesterday.
Absolutely. Well, Alan notwithstanding.
Alan
does make it here. He's our man.
Is Moondog an LV Lug member?
Moondog said that he had come to a couple meetings previously but can't make it now because of scheduling conflicts. But that's cool, Moondog. You're all right because we can see you here on IRC and we know you're listening.
Remember when we first set up the IRC? We had that thing going all the time.
Yes, and no one was ever on there.
Yeah. Well, you know...
you only have three people
on
there.
I was, but I think, I think we had a bot or something that was on all the time.
We did have
that was the only thing I ever saw.
We did have a bot. I remember, I guess the best time that I remember was when Jen was on. And I think it was after, was it we were on with Faber? Or was that you, Link?
What?
We were all on, then Jen left. No, somebody left, and it was just Jen and myself, and I said that Randy Kramer was on the radio, or was on the TV robbing a convenience store, and the cops were chasing after Allen.
No, I was on during that. I was on during that. I watched that one. That was funny.
And, she's... I miss Jen.
I miss Jen, too.
I miss Faber.
Jen, if you're listening to any of this stuff, you definitely have to join us on the show, at least on IRC, and listen to us. And if you aren't listening now, I'm going to remind myself when I listen to the show later to actually send you an email so that you do listen.
And Tom. One of your favorites. Tom. Well, part of the thing that we talked about, some of the stuff we talked about at the LV Lug meeting last night was Slackware 9.1. Jim had asked for copies of Slackware 9.1 installation discs, and Jeff was nice enough to bring a copy. It was Jeff, wasn't it? And he had copies of OpenOffice Word there, too.
There are two discs, though, right, this time?
Yes, there are two discs. And speaking of that, I have a copy of those two discs. I grabbed the ISOs today at work and burned copies of them. And I didn't really get to explore them in full detail because I just used Swaret to upgrade from Release Candidate 2. But it appears that Disk 1 has basically everything but KDE and GNOME on it. And Disk 2 has KDE and GNOME, plus the extras and is also what appears to be the Slackware Live CD.
Like what extras are we talking about here?
GIMP 1.3, Soirette, Fluxbox, I think, is on the extras. I'd have to double check. But it's software that's not really fully included or fully supported in the Slackware distribution proper.
Okay.
Stuff that might be in a little bit of a testing phase. Some of the stuff that's in the extras eventually ends up in the main Slacker.
Cool.
But it's got a lot of nice stuff in there. The only thing I'd stay away from is LibSafe. I'm not sure how LibSafe works, but all I remember is when I had something happen or when it started up and said it wanted to run a CF disk, not CF disk, FSCK,
okay.
It kept bombing out because LibSafe would prevent it from doing that. So don't use LibSafe.
That's just a safety library kind of thing?
It is a safety library, but it's
kind of like one of them worthless go-back things on our favorite operating system, Windows, right?
I don't know if it's a go-back thing, but I didn't really explore too deeply into it other than just to get it off there. Kind of put you in that position.
Other than just to poke it off.
Yeah, it's either get that off of there or, you know, it's like when you remove a real core library that you need for the system to function, like libc.
Yep.
Don't remove libc or something like that while you're running.
Oh,
that does some bad stuff.
Oh,
speaking of doing bad things, I don't know. I have my one system at work was running for over 2 years. And sometime during that process, I somehow deleted a major partition on there, but the damn thing still ran perfectly. Because when I actually shut it off to move it, and I turned it back on, it wouldn't come back up because there was something seriously wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But that's, you know, you got to be a little bit of a testament there to actually delete a major portion of the operating system and it still runs without you noticing something's wrong. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, though, in the long run.
Well, it's a good thing if it keeps running.
Yeah. And the only reason why I took that thing down, took the machine down, is because I moved from one building, my office, from one building to another.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, the only thing
wrong with UPS, and you could have avoided it and just left it running, right?
But I always wondered, if you don't have it on a UPS, how could you get it on a UPS without shutting it off?
I don't think there's any good way to do it, unless you were, like, splicing live wires or something like that.
That's what there was a Seinfeld episode similar to that, where he had the high score on Frogger, and they were going to take the game out of there, and he wanted to plug it into a UPS and take it across the street and got hit by a car. Well, anyway.
Well, wait, I have to interject a story of mine because you gave your story about doing something stupid on Slackware, and I wanted to give some sort of an explanation as to the sheer hell I have been through so far this week because I, in fact, did something stupid myself. And this is probably part of the reason that I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot of research into the stuff that we wanted to talk about this week. I run a couple of Linux boxes at work, and one of them is my main workstation. And what I did as a stupid thing, another developer runs a Linux box too. He runs Slackware 9.0 that I set up for him, and he's having a problem with some of the numeric issues on an old version of numeric, and he wants the updated version to fix the issues that it's having so that it integrates better with Excel. So I figured, you know, me being the Linux geek there and he's just kind of a user, I would take the new version of numeric and I would put it on my machine first just to make sure that everything was cool, you know. So I went into my machine and I, which is running Slackware, by the way, too, and I went in his root and I did a remove package, numeric, and it removed the package just fine and everything was all happy and dandy. And I downloaded the new numeric and I went to compile it and the worst thing happened. It said that I had like all of these 9 million library dependencies. And this is the newest version of numeric we're talking about. So I'm freaking out. You know, I gotta have numeric on my computer because I actually use it on a daily basis. And so I go through and I figure, all right, well, it needs all these new libraries, so maybe I will just you know, bump back a couple of versions and try that one. Well, I tried another one, and that one didn't work either. A bunch of dependencies, nothing would work. So I asked my friend, I said, you know, what version of Numeric are you running over there? And he told me, and I went and got that version of Numeric and put it on there, and that had all these missing libraries. And I figured, all right, I'm screwed. What actually happened was that, you know, I told it to remove Numeric, and all these libraries were only dependent on Numeric, and it removed the libraries too. So I went about the process of painstakingly downloading these library packages off the net, and then I put them back on my machine one at a time. There's like 50 of them, man. It's incredible. And the connection is really, really slower than hell at work to begin with. So I'm doing this, and it takes me like, you know, 2 hours on Monday I spent on it. And I came back in Tuesday, and I did a little bit more, and it still wasn't going. So I figured, you know, this morning I would come in, I'd bring my Slack 9 CD, I'd come in and I'd just copy this stuff over. Sure. So I bought the Slack 9 CD and went in the GNOME directory, and I just installed everything in the GNOME directory. And then I went in the live directory, and I installed everything in the live directory. And guess what? Numeric still didn't work. After I installed all that crap, it's telling me that the fonts weren't configured right. Now, with that information, Dan, do you think you can tell me what the hell the problem was?
You had a partition unmounted?
No.
No, wait. No,
it's even better than that.
Wait, let me think here. You didn't install font config?
No. You got to think stupid. This is a stupid mistake.
Stupid thing. You were in another machine.
Nope.
No.
It's even worse than that.
You were in Windows.
No, that's really bad. Now, what happened was, and this is Lincoln's stupid of the week, okay? What I did was I removed this Numeric package off my computer and then tried to install the same version of the one that was on my friend's computer. Well, my friend, the other developer, is running Slackware 9, and my computer was running Slackware 8.1.
Well, so that would make
nothing
sense.
Worked anywhere. And not only did it not work after I installed all those packages off the 9 CD because I'm retarded, Numeric not work, but gedit didn't work, and a whole bunch of other utilities didn't work too. So when I finally came to my senses and figured out that I'm stupid and I actually was not running Slackware 9 on that computer, I had to go in and replace 3 or 4 of the GNOME programs off of the actual 8.1 edition of Slackware, which of course fixed everything right up. But it was, you know, 3 days worth of nasty hassle just for a really stupid thing like that. So
now, at that point, why didn't you just upgrade?
You know what? I thought about that, but I figured I have all of this stuff running on that computer, and I didn't want to. Number one, I didn't want to take it down again, and number two, I did not want to spend the rest of my day today backing crap up just to make sure that nothing went wrong with the upgrade, which of course it would have because I have the worst luck in, known to mankind.
But it's Slack. It's not like a Novell server.
Yeah, I know it's not, but you know what? At that point, I had reached my stupid point for the day, and my frustration level was pretty bad, and I figured I would just cut my losses and install the 3 or 4 packages that I had to and get it working.
Well, speaking of updating, I just want to give a heads up on my laptop here. That's running Slackware 9.1 now from 9. I believe it was 9 that I installed on here. I don't have a CD-ROM drive on this thing, as you can tell, Link. I have 2 batteries, which allows me to keep it up through the whole show, and even longer, which is nice.
I have a CD-ROM drive on my Dell laptop and a battery, and I'm plugged into the power strip, which allows me to keep it up for the show, too.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have a CD-ROM drive. I don't physically have one to put in there. Uh-oh, I hear somebody yelling.
Uh-oh.
I don't physically have a CD-ROM drive from here. So I was stuck trying to figure out how am I going to get the upgrade to work. Because I thought I could use Swaret, and that would be great, but I'd have to download all the packages. Which I figured, I already have them on a CD. So I used NFS, you know. Mounted the CD, NFS'd over. updated all the packages, was a smooth install. But I was at release candidate 2, so I needed to update even further because you know there was an SSH and an SSL security release patch since 9.1 came out.
Yes.
I ran Soirette, and lo and behold, went out there and pulled all those packages down, just like you'd run apt-get or anything else. Pulled it down. Very easy to configure. I think the configuration took all of 5 minutes, and that includes reading the documentation. And I could have that set up to run as often as I want through a cron job. Now, I had some debate going around on the LVLUG mailing list about Soirette, how to use it, and where the packages are that you can connect to. As far as I know, there is only one repository or one group of repositories. We're talking mirrors and everything, too.
Authorized sources.
Yeah, basically, you're looking at what is provided by Patrick, who manages Slackware.
Right.
I don't think that you can do the same thing off of Linux packages. They don't have a centralized repository for the packages. They are scattered throughout the internet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So unless you build a repository yourself, I think you're just stuck with the basic Slackware packages with that. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another utility out there called Slap Up or whatever it is. It's kind of like apt-get, but it is another Slackware automated packaging update utility, which I believe I tried using once, and it worked pretty well, too. But Soirette's what comes on the extra CD.
So you use Soirette to connect to your... you configure that and connect it to your NFS share.
No, actually, I didn't go that far. I just connected. I just went and did it manually. And then I played around with Soirette.
Cool.
I'm sure you could do the same thing. You just need to make sure that there is a configuration file in there. I haven't delved too deeply into the server end of Soirette yet, just the client end using it, which you'd actually need to go. So we have 9.1 on the laptop, and the wife had been using KDE for the longest time. So I figured she needs to get off of that dog, that hog of KDE.
Well, what kind of speed laptop you got there?
It's a P3 350, I believe it is.
Ooh.
With only 64 megs of RAM, so it's not... No, it's a 550. I'm sorry. 350. 550. So it's not lightning fast. And KDE was kind of dogging it. So I figured, I don't want to give her Window Maker because it's a little too alien.
Oh,
XFCE.
KDE's a moose on 64 megs of RAM. It sucks it all up before it even starts.
XFCE would be too alien. So I figured, Ice Window Maker.
What do you mean XFCE is too alien?
For someone coming from a Macintosh and a Windows background, I wanted to give her something more familiar to break her in even more.
Ice
Window Maker. I had one compiling.
So don't show her like the true and the real kind of Unix window manager thing, and we just start her back on some Windows-looking thing, right?
Well, you know what? She's very happy with it. It runs like a top, changes the desktop background every 2 minutes to another picture of the kids, and she's happy.
Cool.
The only problem I have with this thing is when it goes into a suspend mode, it goes into a sleep mode. When you bring it back up, it disconnects from the network, from the wireless network, and you have to reinitialize the card.
Wow. So why don't you just go into your BIOS and fix it so it doesn't suspend? Which is what I did on my Dell laptop, like my just about matching Dell laptop that I have over here. I just went in and set it so that it does not suspend, and that doesn't happen anymore.
That's something. So you were losing connection too?
Yes, I would. I would lose. Not only would I lose my connection when I suspended, but if I suspended and like put my screen down on the laptop, when I brought it back up, X would be all funky too, and I'd have to bust out of that and restart it again. So I just went right in and fixed it so it didn't suspend anymore, and that seemed to do the trick, man. I haven't had any problems since.
I have to look into doing that. That's the only problem I've had with this laptop. Comes back without a problem from suspend. I set up a script for my wife that all she has to do is, you know, execute it from the root menu of Ice Window Maker, and it'll automatically do that. But we can avoid that altogether. It'd be a little easier for
us. That's cool. And speaking of Ice Window Maker, you're probably using the newest version.
Yes, I am.
Out right now, too, aren't you? I used to use Ice Window Manager a lot, too. And I used to like it a lot back in the day. But I have not tried it in quite some time. I'd be interested to hear your impressions.
I don't think there's much of a difference. Same as it was before. It works like a top. I don't see too much, like I said, of a difference. I didn't really use it too extensively in the past. I mean, we were setting it up on that Vector for Kids distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, you know, the Vectors for Kids distribution, I thought about running Rock's desktop on here in conjunction with it.
Right.
But they must have changed their site or something. I could not get it to do what we were doing before. I was unclear about running Rocks.
Which is what, do the icon management?
Yeah, I have the Rocks filer.
I have it running right here. What you have to do is use the pinboard option.
Of Rocks filer?
Yeah, you get Rocks filer, you install Rocks so that, like, when you type in Rocks, it pulls up the little filer menu.
Right.
But instead of doing that, when you start it up on the command line, you're going to do Rocks space dash pinboard equals some kind of name, which is the name you're going to give it to hold your pinboard settings, and that will start up the little icon management stuff on the side. It's really cool.
Huh.
Use it all the time.
Is that the same thing that we were putting on Vector for Kids? Or was there an actual Rocks desktop application?
No, that's the same thing.
The same thing?
That's the same thing, yep.
Oh, well, I'll have to inspect that a little more. Because I haven't used Rocks in a very long time. I'd like to see how it runs on here.
Use it every day. Every day. So it's definitely
a
good thing.
We're not running Rocks, we're just not cool, right?
That's right.
Because God knows.
That's right. Me over here, I'm running Rocks, and I'm cool. I'm looking at it right now.
On your XFCE, right?
Rocks and XFCE. That is the killer set of X apps, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know what? We're going down our hack together list for tonight, and we seem to be doing more of shooting the crap than anything else. But you wanted to update your SSH talk from last week?
Yeah, just as sort of like an addendum. Last week I was talking about some things that I had to do with SSH so that I could create an SSH tunnel between my home machine and my work machine, which sat behind a firewall. And if you didn't catch that talk last week, then by all means, go ahead and download the archive and check it out. But the one thing that I wanted to add to that, that I didn't get to talk about last week, is in order to get all of this stuff accomplished, I had to set up some kind of an automatic authentication method for SSH, because normally when you use SSH, you SSH into a machine, and it asks you the password for that account that you're SSHing into on that machine. Well, I can't do that if I hook this thing up in a script so that it automatically keeps a tunnel connection open for me, a secure shell tunnel open for me. So authentication is the only method I could do. In looking it up real quick, there are four or five different places you can look up how to do this, but I'm going to give you the condensed, really, really easy version. Okay? The easy way to do this is to go into the computer that you're going to connect to, and you go into the, hopefully this is where it is, it's an etc SSH, and there's a configuration file called SSHD_config or conf, and if you browse down through that, you're going to see three little lines together that say RSA authentication, pub key authentication, and authorized keys files. These are normally commented out with the little hash marks or pound keys. Just pull those hash marks out and make sure they all say yes. RSA authentication, yes. Pub key authentication, yes. And authorized key file should say .ssh/authorized keys. Once you have that in there, restart your SSH server. And then you're going to go to your local machine that you want to connect with. On that machine, you need to generate your SSH keys. What I did to do that, again, this is real simple. I did a SSH-keygen space key, which is for the type of keys you want to generate. And I picked RSA, so it's SSH-keygen space dash T space RSA. And immediately it says generating public-private RSA key pair. And it says enter the file in which to save the key. I just picked a default. Enter a passphrase. You can put a passphrase in or not. Same passphrase again. And then it tells you your identification has been saved in your home directory under .ssh slash ID underscore RSA. And your public key has been saved in your home directory .ssh slash ID underscore RSA .pub. Now, the all-time easiest way to do this, at this point in time, you're pretty much set to go. All you have to do is get that ID underscore RSA .pub, your public key. You need to get that, and you need to get that to the box you want to connect to, the server you want to connect to, and put that in your .ssh slash authorized keys file, authorized underscore keys. Once that's in there, you should be able to secure shell to that address. It should ask you a question. Just pop you right up with your prompt, and you're good to go.
Gee, Link, that was an essay in itself there.
It's an essay, and it sounds a little more difficult than it really is to do. It really only takes 10 seconds, and man, it makes your life a whole lot easier. I mean, just keep in mind that if you're doing this kind of thing, be kind of careful where you put it, because if somebody gets on one of your boxes and they know the addresses of other boxes and you have accounts on them, if you have this thing set up, they can just jump on there and go from box to box without ever having to type a password. But for my purposes, the what I had to use it for at this particular point in time, it was a lifesaver, I'm telling you.
I did that once a long time ago, and your directions were really succinct and on the mark. Are they on your blog?
Partially.
Are they going to be on your blog?
Partially. They're partially on there. I can... If whatever's not on there, I can update, yeah.
That would be great, because I know those two people listening right now would really want to review that. I don't think they had their pens and pencils ready to record that.
Right.
So either they're going to have to download an archive version and keep playing it back and forth.
Well, absolutely.
You're narrating directions,
I think they should download the archive
version.
Grab
it off of your blog.
It looks really good on my web stats when you download the archive, so go right ahead.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We're really pushing time out the door here tonight.
Yes,
we're gonna take a little intermission. I think what we should do is play another song. Play a song from the group that we played last week, and I never made mention as to who that was when we came back from the group. I think I put it on the blog, so I apologize for that. But the group is Tangentile Cold, and I guess you had said you really like them, Link.
Good stuff. They're pretty good. They're pretty good.
And we're going to be playing another song for them called Cinema Shuffle. Just a moment. Why it's looping through right now, but we're going to play that on. We'll be back in approximately 3 minutes. You enjoy it, and stay on, please. Thank you. That was Cinema Shuffle by Tangentile Cold. I hope you really enjoyed that. I know we did.
Oh, it was awesome.
It was awesome. Sitting here watching the time bar go by. That was exciting.
Music filling the virtual air.
Yes, and speaking of the virtual air and the internet, we're moving right along to Mozilla and Mozilla-based projects.
Yes.
And I've been out of the loop on stuff going on due to work issues, and Link informs me that they've released not only a new Mozilla version 1.5, but Mozilla Firebird 0.7 is out.
And the Thunderbird 0.3.
Thunderbird 0.3.
I think it was 0.2 before.
And I wonder, I'd have to double check on my OS X box, but I'm wondering if Camino 0.7.
Yes, Camino is new too.
Is new.
They did the whole.
This is so much new stuff that's released this week. You're using a Mozilla-based browser, right?
I used, I use several Mozilla-based browsers. I use Netscape, and I use Mozilla itself, and I use Mozilla Firebird, which you turned me onto, which is really cool.
And Galleon?
Galleon I use as well.
I used to be a big Galleon fan.
Galleon is awesome.
Until I moved to Slackware 9, and 9 did not have Galleon in it because GNOME 2 did not have support for Galleon.
Right.
But Slackware 9.1 now has support, has Galleon 2 in it. And I'll tell you what, I really like Galleon. I like Firebird a little bit better.
Do you really?
I like Firebird. One thing I do miss from Galleon that Firebird doesn't have is I like the interface, particularly with the different search boxes up at the top.
Right.
You can configure, you know, Fresh Meat, Google, Google Groups. So you can just hit those right away.
Right.
I really like that. I think the original GNOME 1.4 or 1.x series with Galleon 1 is a little bit faster than Galleon 2.
I really like Galleon. I use it a lot. And this past week, after you told me about the Firebird stuff, I've been using Firebird quite a bit, and I do like it. The one thing that I really don't like about it, or that's I guess different to me, is I don't think that the download manager part of it works quite as well as the download manager for Galleon. You know, honestly, I haven't even really looked to see if you can change it or not. I know you can in Galleon, but it doesn't seem to roll along as fast. Not saying that the browser itself is not quick, because it really is, and I like that. But I just don't think it downloads as fast or as efficiently as the old standard Galleon I'm used to using.
Have you tried the gestures from the Optimize project?
No, I have not. I did look at them, and they look really cool, but that's like way too involved for me.
Oh, it's so easy. You just, you know, drop it down. You grab it. It's like just plug-in. It's really easy to install.
Yeah, but
and I'm telling you, man,
like
they're really addicting.
It's the stuff that I don't use. I mean, like minimize and that. Normally, I just leave the damn browser open, and I'm happy with
it. Do you back and forward?
Back
Do
and
you use
forward.
Back and forward buttons on your browser?
Occasionally.
It's so addicting to just click the mouse and move right and left to go back and forward. If you do a lot of different browsing.
Well, you know what I was looking at? When I was reading about the gestures, and I thought it would be a really, really slick idea for someone to actually come out with this that works on the desktop itself. You know what I mean? Something that you could customize gestures to start up different applications and, you know, minimize or switch desktops and all that other kind of. That would be pretty slick, man.
Shortcut keys. You know,
yeah,
you might be able to do that in Window Maker. I'm not
like
sure.
Little gestures, that would be cool.
I'm not sure. I'd have to double check. Maybe not as sophisticated. Mm-hmm. Some of the other stuff to check out, though. Well, let's finish up with the browsers.
Mm-hmm.
Slackware 9.1 has included Epiphany, which is now being called the GNOME browser.
That's a new kid on the block. I haven't looked at that one yet.
Right. It's another Mozilla-based browser, but it's what the GNOME project is calling the browser for GNOME. And it's very similar to Galleon.
You know what's really funny about this whole thing is like we have now already talked about like four different Mozilla browsers, okay? And there's this whole big thing going on where like AOL is now going to close down Netscape or some such thing, and people are worried about what that's going to do with the browsers, whether there's going to be any more good browsers around. And I keep looking around going, you know, every browser I use is based on Mozilla now, so I don't understand where they're going with that. But
I don't understand either. Mozilla, man, they just keep putting out a kick-ass product.
Yeah.
I think, personally. I use it on all operating systems that I've run, and it runs great, I think.
Oh, I love it. It's a standard thing. And even Windows people now. Well, you'll meet a Windows person, and they'll tell you, like, oh, well, one of the applications that I have to have is Mozilla. You know, they use it for their, because it's more secure for their email and their, you know, their web browsing and stuff like that runs a little bit faster than IE or whatever they're running.
Yeah, Mozilla has not only just a browser, and there's also mail clients, but there's a whole project, a whole programming language, I think, built around Mozilla. You have so many different projects. There's calendars, Mozilla's graphical user interface for making customized GUI interfaces. There's an IDE for developing purposes. What is that called? Camino, I believe. There's a whole bunch of stuff based off of Mozilla. Now, what's so funny?
No, just some ramblings people are doing on the IRC.
But I can't sit here and read the IRC while we're talking.
Dan cannot multitask.
But
that's all right, Dan. Really, you don't have to read that anyway.
Am I too close to the mic?
No, I think you're a little bit too far away from the mic.
Too far. Last time I was too close, now I'm too far. Anyway, we're talking about Mozilla. I'll tell you one thing that's really ticked me off at work these past couple of weeks is redesigning the work website. I don't know. I remember in the past people complaining how ugly Linux looked and the font support in Linux. And I'll tell you what, I've been developing this website for the school district predominantly on OS X, using Mozilla as the initial testing browser, also Conqueror on Linux. Again, with staying with OS X, I have used Safari, Netscape, and Opera on both Linux and OS X, Firebird, Mozilla, Epiphany, Galleon on Linux. And all of those, it looks really nice. When I go to a Windows machine, it looks like crap. And I've just been so furious. I went to the W3C website because a few weeks ago I posted a problem I was having with regards to creating the side menu and having it extend down to the bottom of the screen. There's a little kind of a quark in Internet Explorer or Internet Explorer browsers that are similar to Internet Explorer. The way they handle it is it won't go down all the way to the bottom of the screen. It'll only go down to a certain block of text. Mm-hmm. It was being a real pain in the butt. So eventually I decided to scrap that idea and just make a fixed height menu bar on the side. Now, funny. Now, I thought, hey, it would be cool to fix that menu bar, so that it would go up and down the screen.
Right.
When you're browsing. So if the content of the screen extends below the browser window, you scroll down, that bar stays on the left. And it worked great in Mozilla. Worked perfect. Looked beautiful. I went to the W3C org site. They have one of those on their CSS style page. Goes up and down the screen. I fire up Internet Explorer. Nope, does not do it at all. You get this chunk at the top, and then it shifts everything down and looks horrible. So I'm like, oh, how come this is not supported in Internet Explorer? So I went out looking on the web, and there's these crazy hacks that you can do to get it to be supported in Internet Explorer. So I'm like, this is a standard. Cascading style sheets is the standard. Why does it work on all these but not on Windows? So I go to the W3C org cascading style sheet page in Internet Explorer, and lo and behold, they got this big, chunky, ugly menu that sticks up at the top of the screen and doesn't scroll down. So I don't understand how Internet Explorer could be considered a number one browser and such a cutting-edge browser.
Because the difference between, like, there's, like, two tech things in this world. There's, like, the standard, and then there's Microsoft. Now, Microsoft creates its own standard and can give a crap about anybody else's standard. So even though we have this wonderful standard that everybody else in the world is adhering to, as long as Microsoft says that, you know, they want to do things differently or they don't want to adhere to that standard, then, you know, all bets are off. And the traffic flows whichever way it does. But
well, it's kind of lousy. I'm just so ticked off about it. It's hideous. It's ugly. It's blocky. It's chunky. And everybody should just use Mozilla.
Absolutely.
Then I wouldn't have any problems. And the whole world would be happy.
Absolutely. Or, switch to Opera or something like that. Very often do I tell somebody to grab Opera if they're on a Windows machine. I really should tell them Mozilla more often, but a lot of times I'll tell them to grab Opera and use Opera if they're looking for a second lighter weight, faster browser, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that pushes Opera out a little further is it's a significantly smaller download than Mozilla, I believe. Isn't Opera like 6 or 7 megs?
It's 6 or 7 megs, yep.
Mozilla can be like 15 or more megs.
Right.
Depending on whether you get the TalkBack for error support and some of the other stuff. But Firebird is about 8 megs.
Right.
Depending on which operating system you're downloading for.
And Firebird is from what I've seen the past week that I've been using it, it's a fantastic, little web browser. I have no problems whatsoever, other than the fact that I'm just not used to the download thing yet.
All right. Well, that's my beef about Internet Explorer and my desire for Mozilla. And for everybody who uses Mozilla, that was a little piece on Mozilla browsers.
Yes. Dan's desire for Mozilla.
Dan's desire for Mozilla. We'll move on to our next topic because we're getting close to the end of the show.
Really close.
Very close.
Really close. Now, this next topic, we're talking about the links tech stuff, huh?
Yes, we are.
Moving on, or you want to move into something a little bit more important, like your GameCube?
Well, we can hit your tech stuff because I'm talking with Alan, our systems engineer over here.
Yeah,
because I hum on my microphone.
Well, they talk about Dan's mysterious hum. I will talk about Lynx tech stuff. Now, the tech stuff that I'm talking about is, for some reason, right, I have this fascination with what kind of technology people have in their house and what they actually use it with or use it for. And most specifically, I'm talking about their computer equipment, you know. And what I would like to do and what I have started is if you follow the links from the Tech Show website, you're going to see a link to my tech stuff. Let me see if I can bring it up here while I'm talking to you. And basically what it is a picture archive. It's just the link says link set up at home. And if you follow that in and see link at home, it brings up a picture archive of the kind of equipment that I have running at home. And I love all this hardware stuff. And I'm really interested to know what kind of hardware you people out there have and what you use it for. Like, for instance, I run a Linux box at home, which is my main computer, and it's also my gateway and my access to the internet. And I run an Indy, which does some video monitoring for me for a security camera. And I run a couple other boxes to do other things. I run mail servers and DNS servers and MP3 servers and all kinds of wonderful things like that. And I'm interested to see what kind of stuff you guys have. So if you could, what I would really like to do is to get you to send me an email or by all means send me some pictures and I'll be happy to stick them up on the website and we can have like a little technology show to see what kind of things everybody's using. And I'd like to see Dan's stuff up on there too, but he's a really big procrastinator and it's kind of hard to get him to do that. Next time on the tech show, I will bring my digital camera myself though and take pictures of his ugly mug whether he likes it or not.
Now you prefer your images to come over in bitmap format particularly at least 600 by 1200 DPI or 1200 by 600 DPI. If I'm not mistaken, am I correct? Is that what you prefer?
No, that you standard JPEG.
To increase that resolution up as high as you possibly can.
No.
Because the larger the file, the more it takes. Well, you know, yeah, I shouldn't say that because that's my email server space that it'll be hung up.
That's right. Before it hits your. But no, just any standard. If you want to take a picture and you want me to put it up on the site with a short description, absolutely send it to me, and I will do so as standard old JPEG or GIF images, whatever, PNG if you really prefer that. It's cool with me, and we'll put the stuff up there and compare a little bit and see what kind of goodies we can see.
And speaking of that, taking pictures of this place, we did redesign our layout here, and it seems like we might be experiencing some technical difficulties, particularly with the sound quality. I guess coming from my microphone in particular, where I sound extremely loud.
You know what? I wonder if it's just not Dan's cheap microphone. Maybe we can rectify. I shouldn't say that though, because like I'm working with one of the other things we're going to talk about tonight is, you know, how we do the tech show anyway, but. We might get into that some other time, but I shouldn't say Dan's cheap microphone because I don't know how cheap his microphone is. But the one that I'm using actually sounds pretty good, I think, and it's a $20 Radio Shack special. So it's a Optimus microphone, $20 Radio Shack special.
Mine came with a cheap karaoke machine.
Hey, so did the purple mic of doom that Alan was talking out of. It comes out of a cheap karaoke. I think it was like $4.
That's probably how much mine costs. Maybe I should invest.
They sound really
a
good.
A little more.
I don't know. Maybe you
well,
just
apparently we're having a problem with mine.
We'll have to get.
Everybody's complaining.
All right, so
except one person's complaining.
Everybody that's listening, we need to have a sponsor here to buy Dan a better microphone.
Yeah. Link, you didn't buy me a mic, did you? No. This is my mic from home. From here.
Right.
From the house.
My mic from home. From here. From the.
You know, one thing I wanted to bring up before the end of the show that amazes me is I had shown you this GameCube disc before the show began. This one in particular is Eternal Darkness, an awesome game. But anyway, these discs are like the size of a CD single.
That is the coolest thing.
Remember we went to, was it Resident Evil we saw?
Yes.
And we got that cup at the Regal Theater, had that CD signal?
Yes.
It's like almost the size of that CD signal.
Yeah, just about, yeah.
But the amount of information and the quality of the video and graphics.
See, that's why I think
the length of the game, it has to be multi-layered.
Yeah, well, that's why, I don't know if it's multi-layered, but I bet you it's DVD encoded. You know what I mean? Like, if, you probably can't do that because they don't make mini DVDs yet, do they, on the market?
Well,
they probably do, but I haven't seen them.
Word on the internet is you can't put these in any kind of other kind of player other than a GameCube.
No, but I mean, if we could get someone with a DVD burner and somewhere someone could find a mini DVD CD same size, I bet that's the code that they're using on it, the compression that they're using on it. There's no way they could be regular CD compression on there.
I don't think so. The amount of
with that amount of information.
I do think it has to be layered. I heard that there is a second layer on there.
But
just doing
just,
some
yeah,
research on
stuff,
the internet.
Man.
You can't record these things yet or make backup copies, but you can. That you can kind of see a second layer if you hold it to the light properly. Uh-huh. I just thought that they were utterly amazing, because I know your PlayStation uses. Big old fat CD size.
Yes, it does. Big old fat CD size with funky black backs on them and all kinds of. They look like, you know. Yeah. What's funny about that is it's a PlayStation game, but if you take the game itself out, the CD, and you look at it, it reminds me a lot of the. A couple of years ago, they came out with this children's CD player thing, and the CDs look just like that, man. I'm telling you, it's the funniest thing.
And speaking of gaming systems, Alan got himself a Xbox.
Woo-hoo.
Went over to the dark side.
Woo-hoo.
Supporting Microsoft.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to get Linux installed on it. But he's cheap bastard didn't buy the right kind of.
My two attempts at buying flash drives to put the one little hack file on it that I need for it.
Isn't it just a USB drive that you have to have for this thing?
Well, that's all it is, but unfortunately the Xbox only recognizes a few types. And unfortunately both of the ones I have it doesn't recognize. So I'm waiting to either come up with another one, you know, find somebody who can lend me one for a while and see whether or not it works.
And of course, you're going to gratefully donate the two that you have that don't work to the tech show, right?
We'll do a review for you. But either that or I'm going to find somebody who already has it done, and I've got a memory card, and you can get as long as somebody can put the file on a memory card, then, of course, Xbox can read it, and I can put the hack on it, and then go out and get the MechAssault game, play the MechAssault game for a while, get the hack on, and put Linux on it. Which is my real reason for buying the thing, anyways.
Well, why didn't you just, you know,
buy a Linux box?
Get a Linux box.
because it was more fun. It was more fun this way to try to get it on there. I've got Linux on PlayStation already. I went out and bought that kit, and that was fun for a while. I had it running on Dreamcast for a while. Which, unfortunately, that was more of a pain in the butt to do anything with.
But that's really cool technology stuff, Alan. How come you never bring any of this stuff to the lug so I can play with it?
I can bring the PlayStation in with the box on it. That's not too
bad.
The Dreamcast I don't have running anymore. So
now, Alan, you have Linux running on PlayStation and on the Dreamcast. Now, both of those machines.
And on
two Macs. But one thing I want to ask your opinion on is you can get Linux running on the Xbox, provided you don't get the latest updates, if I'm not mistaken, because then it breaks that capability of doing that.
If you go, from what I understand, if you go on Xbox Live, it'll automatically try to download the latest. I think they call it dashboard, is what Microsoft calls it. But since I don't ever plan on doing this, because it's not connected to the internet now, and I'll just play the games on it. I guess as long as it doesn't see an internet connection, it doesn't try to put Xbox Live on there for you. I'm not that big of a gamer, so it doesn't make a difference to me.
Now, that dashboard, did they purposely patch it so you... I mean, does it break the ability to run Linux even if you've installed it on there?
Supposedly, it not only breaks the ability to run it, but it also deletes everything on the drive you put it on.
That's some really cheesy, crappy... tactics there.
That's kind of, you know, you think about it, you could do it on the PlayStation, you could do it on the Dreamcast, and they don't care. But God, you know, Microsoft.
Don't put it on that Xbox, man.
PlayStation was nice. I mean, obviously you had to pay for the kit, but the kit comes with everything you need. You drop the CD in, and you just go.
The kit was what? The kit was a network. Network dongle and a keyboard and a mouse and all kinds of stuff. Right?
I think it had an 80 gig drive or a 40 gig drive. I don't remember. I think it was a 40 gig drive I have on there. It came with the network card, keyboard, mouse. Basically, the whole thing, you just slid it in the back of it and it was ready to go.
Now that's cool.
Now you could do the hack for Linux on the Xbox by ripping the system apart and doing some soldering.
Yeah, you can put the you can chip it as well.
Mod chip.
Unfortunately, my soldering skills are not that good. My hands shake way too much.
If you put a mod chip on there, do you still have the same issues with the dashboard update?
No, I think once you mod it, I don't think you can go back to playing games.
Oh.
I think it becomes strictly back to being a regular box again.
But that's kind of unfortunate. And what else is unfortunate is we are pretty much out of time for tonight.
We are out of time.
Link is saying to wrap things up.
It's a wrap. And we do have like another minute that we can talk, though, because, of course, we always start like a minute or two late anyway. But that's pretty much all the time we have for tonight, unfortunately.
That's our wrap-up of the first month. And
wow.
It's been four shows. Hey, 57 downloads, is it?
56 or 57 downloads. Quite a few. That doesn't count however many people have actually listened to it on the stream, too.
Right. The only time the stream's been down was today when somehow the power went out on this outlet over here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I took it down to move the room around. So we've been running pretty successfully. I've gotten some, you know, fairly good feedback from people at work who've listened to it, and they enjoy it. And we're going to be back again next week with a whole new show and hopefully a little more preparation if our jobs will allow it.
Yeah, that would be cool.
And Alan will get his own mic stand soon.
Yeah.
And he'll become an integral part of the show.
We'll have to get...
I'll have to even dig up a microphone, I guess.
Yeah, man, mic stands and real microphones. Microphones that cost more than $4.
Yes, I'll look into getting myself a microphone because I don't want to sound like I'm coming out of... the toilet.
Out of the karaoke machine.
So, yeah, out of the karaoke machine. We'll
karaoke machine microphones. This is a plea to all you nice people out there. If you really would like to sponsor the tech show, you know, we could use your help. We're working with karaoke machine microphones. But, no, in all actuality, most of the equipment that we have works really, really good for, you know, what we got it for, which is practically nothing.
That's
so
true.
I mean, we've spent more on the microphone stand so far than we have on anything else for the tech show.
Well, you know what? We didn't have a crash this week. It looks like V-Sound's working perfect. We got two backups.
We have not had a crash since the first episode.
Yep, that is
episode.
True.
Since the first show.
Yes, that is true. So we're going to leave you with the infamous Linux Link Tech Show theme, Ruined, by yours truly. And we will see you next week. Thanks for listening and being on the chat. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Pulling a Flink Tech Show. Pulling a Flink Tech Show.
Hey, welcome to the October 15th, the fourth version of the Linux Link Tech Show.
Woo-hoo.
I'm Dan Washko. I'll be your co-host tonight, and right across from me, so close I could kiss him on the lips, the infamous Mr. Link Fezzenden.
Thank you very much. Hi, everybody.
How you doing today, Link?
I'm doing really good. How about yourself, Dan?
I'm doing pretty good myself. It would help if I had a microphone closer, I think. All right. This is our fourth show, Link.
Yeah, four shows. Now, that's an entire month we've been doing this with our whole, three or four users each time. Well, three or four live users each time. I do have a really interesting piece of information before we go a lot further with that, though. I looked today, and we have actually had the archives downloaded 56 times.
Is that...
56 any, times
you,
for,
you have
for these four shows.
Any statistics as to which show was downloaded the most?
I could probably go through and look and generate some interesting statistics, but as of right now, last...